Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Omega Leadership Series show, where each week we come and talk to each other about the principles of an Omega leader and what that means and where that phrase came from. So we are continuing our discussions this week on the principle of perspective, how Jesus, the Omega leader, formed his team of 12, led them, challenged them, discipled them, grew them around these principles found in what Lori Beth Jones has coined as the Omega leadership style. So this evening we have with us in the studio Lori Beth Jones. Welcome, Lori Beth.
I'm here.
And we have Elisa Holston. Welcome, Elisa.
It's nice to be here representing the educational pillar.
And Vicky Arteaga. Welcome, Vicky.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And that rounds us out again this evening here, talking to you all that are listening in from around the world, around the globe. We're calling from San Diego. Excited to talk to you about perspective this evening and two particular ways that, Lori Beth, that you have introduced this principle, this section of how Jesus led his team of 12. Where two things we're going to focus on tonight are that God drew in circles and how Jesus had a larger perspective. Those are the two things that we're going to be unpacking this evening. And I thought they were both kind of interesting ways to begin this section on perspective. And maybe you could just talk to each of us here a little bit about your thoughts as you gathered this material several years ago, really, and are bringing it in a fresh new way to each of us that are part of this discussion with you, as well as the listeners. So give us a little overview of those two thoughts as we begin our discussions this evening.
Well, I was sharing with Shelley and Vicky in the pre-show that I've recently reconnected with a dear relative that I don't remember having. His name is Jim Lloyd, and he lives in Oak Hill, Ohio, and he was my grandmother's first cousin, and he's quite a researcher. And he just sent me a book of our family tree going back to Wales all the way to 1837. And one of the funny stories which relates is that my Aunt Stella, when the cars came out, she couldn't figure out how to do gear shifts. She didn't know how to put things in reverse. So she had them build a garage that had a front door and a back door, so she would just drive straight through. She never had to back up, which meant, when you think about it, she was always going in circles around her house, getting there and coming. And I think that that's something to be said for us, too, that sometimes nobody here at this table, of course, but some people don't like to make U-turns.
I'm here. I heard what you said.
And making a U-turn is a sign of maturity and being willing to change direction. In fact, repent means make a U-turn, turn a different direction. And I was driving with a woman in either Nashville or Ohio recently, and she was saying that she told her daughter, always be willing to make a U-turn. You can always make a U-turn no matter where you are and what's going on. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have to think like trains. You know, we've set the course, you know, full speed ahead. And to think about perspective, I've been reading Ken Follett's book, Fall of Giants, and if you haven't read it, I really recommend it. And he's a historian, and he tells the story of a Welsh family, which is why I picked it up, and German aristocrats and Russian peasants, and he weaves their personal lives into the beginning of World War I and then how it played out in history. And when Wilson was trying to end the war, 10 million people had died. And so he sent an envoy to each of the major nations, and he said, please tell me in a single sentence what you were trying to accomplish. And nobody could answer. They just wanted to win. So those are people who are not looking at it from a larger perspective. They just see victory or defeat, and that's their only they're like a binary old computer system that could only read up or down, up or down, up or down, and it was one or the other. And so that narrow-mindedness causes stiff necks. It causes hypocrisy. It causes people to miss the U-turn that can get them into heaven. So I just thought I would share a little bit about that and opening up the show.
So when you are explaining about the how God goes in circles, and even his timeline is not linear, and his ways are not linear, and I love how you said the example of when Jesus, they brought the sinner woman to him, and he didn't draw a line and said, okay, on this side are the good people, and on that side are the bad people. But he was drawing something, most likely circles, or, you know, just making sure that we're all in this together, and we're all in this as sinners. And I was thinking, out of the different personalities, and I'm not saying that some might have more propensity to not go in circles, but I was thinking that it would be a little challenging for fires. What, you know, because you have a goal and you try to achieve that goal, and if you have that tendency, how could you first know that, time out, we might go fast and all that, but maybe in the wrong direction. How can we make ourselves aware that we need to go in a circle?
Well, I think that it comes from humility and the larger perspective, and that's really the whole purpose or the what I really want to teach through teaching about the elements is to have a larger perspective, that fires are going to see one thing and waters are going to see another and winds are going to see another and the earth's going to see another. But we need all of them. And so fires especially, you know, they just want to win. They forget what they're fighting about. It's been 5 years. 10 million people have died. They don't remember. Mm-hmm. They're either losing or winning. And it was interesting, too, in the armistice treaty, they rejected, the countries rejected Wilson's League of Nations, and they were, according to this story, they were very harsh with Germany and they really humiliated them, and they took their lands, and a number of people, including wise Germans and people there, were saying, this is not going to go well going forward. In fact, Wilson said, there will be another war because of the way people were treating. You lost, so you pay. And I'm not excusing Germany at all, but they're saying that this is what fed the fire of Hitler, mm-hmm. because they felt humiliated and deprived, and so he took those ashes and blew on them and turned them into a fire that killed another, that started mm-hmm. another world war.
It's interesting, the whole idea of circles. I don't know what element, if it's my earth, if it's my fire, if it's my earth, but left to my own devices, I tend to be very linear. And Shelley's laughing. Is that my earth or my fire or just me? I don't know what it is. But in education, you know, pedagogically, there are different styles of curriculum development. And one idea is a linear curriculum, and another idea is a spiral curriculum. And it's an interesting thing that fresh today, I just came from a staff meeting with my teachers, and many of my teachers were very much pushing back against a new spiral curriculum that we just adopted because it was a very different paradigm than what we had pursued. Probably much of it due to me, because me being very linear, I was pushing them to be very linear in terms of the curriculum they were pursuing. And I had a great conversation with another double fire, and she's saying she's seen the spiral. We're only 2 months into our school year, but she's already seen the spiral come back around. She's seen the circle come back around. Because of that circle and that spiral, she's seen that the students have really grasped the concepts. Mm. And that frees her then to go on to more abstract instruction. And there's a Russian pedagogue, Zygalski, and he talks about concentric circles. And he thinks, think about what you're looking, in terms of instruction, but I think it definitely applies to life. He thinks, It's concentric. It's three concentric circles. The inner circle is what's easy. It's what we've mastered,
mm-hmm.
right? The middle circle is what he calls the zone of proximal development. That's the zone where we develop mastery, where we grow, where we're challenged in workouts and in challenging our bodies. It's those extra reps that pushes us beyond what we think is easy, right? It's where you feel the muscles burning. And then the outer concentric circle is what's yet to be mastered. But his perspective is very much one of circles, not one of a linear form of mastery. And I think that's very true not only in education but in life. If we think in terms of those circles, what's inside we've mastered, then we push out to that center zone, that zone of proximal development, and we push and we let those muscles burn, be it intellectual muscles, be it emotional muscles, be it physical muscles, be it relational muscles. And once that's mastered, that becomes the middle zone, the center, the first zone, which is the easy zone, and what was the outer zone yet to be developed becomes the zone of proximal development. In other words, it's continual. The more we work in that zone of proximal development, the more we're mastering, right, the world around us and the things, our challenges, and then the more within our grasp becomes the things that we thought that were way beyond our grasp.
Wow, that's beautiful.
You know, I was sitting here, that was profound, man. I got to, like, soak on that for a second.
It's the Russian Zygotsky, what can I tell you?
Yeah, wow. I think we've all seen lots of models, Lori Beth, either in business, in education, as you've just named, in the church, discipleship, evangelism, different kinds of programs that have the model of these circles
mm-hmm.
that attach and even spiritual development, spiritual formation, you know, has the rings and the different circles or circle of life, right? Or, you know, wedding rings, wedding bands in a circular. There's a lot of meaning to circles. And so I'm wondering, as you have written this as a way that Jesus knew that God drew in circles. So was Jesus with his team trying to communicate that, you know, don't box yourself in,
mm-hmm.
you know. In here, you know, you say life is composed of seasons and cycles, spirals rather than verticals. And I think you talked about that on another show, I'm recalling, a little bit about how, you know, unless it's gravity that's taking hold of you as you leap out of an airplane,
mm-hmm.
a lot of times it's not just a straight landing point from A to B.
Mm-hmm.
It gets fashioned in a circular way or a spiral way, as Elisa has so eloquently described for us. So in relation to leadership, this principle of perspective and how Jesus knew that God drew in circles, how do we as leaders lay that template over teams and organizations in light of this circular perspective?
I'm glad you all ask such easy questions. Look what you started. Well, I'm thinking in terms of leadership, that the leader has to have the perspective that things are going to grow in a circular spiral fashion, not in necessarily a linear or a chart going up and up and up, you know. And well, there's a triple bottom line. The more advanced CEOs or the more enlightened CEOs talk about the triple bottom line. It's the service to the community, it's the profit, and it's also the growth of your people.
One more time.
Service to the community, for, you know, the bottom line, which is profit, which is the only thing that Wall Street really has looked at, many companies. And then are you serving the community? Are you doing good things with that money? And then the third thing is, are you growing your people?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you think about a baby in the womb, it develops in a spiral fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And it's born in a circle. I mean, when you look at it, the way it develops. So imagine if we could have businesses that had that perspective on growth, on customer service, on product development, that it's not just a bunch of silos and territories, but that it's all connected, that it's an integrated platform, integrated circuit, integrated curriculum, integrated thinking. So when you think about Jesus in circles and his perspective, I noticed when I was rereading the chapter prior to the show on perspective that the Renaissance artists had to have huge frames because they almost always had angels. They almost had to have the angels in the picture somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the heavenly host in the frame somewhere looking down on the people. And imagine if we had that as our perspective instead of I'm all alone, this is just me. But if we drew a larger circle and included the angels who are sent to guard us and the ancestors who are calling us on. And my friend Jim Lloyd wrote that the Chinese believe that you need to know your ancestors 9 generations back in order to be a full person.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And that takes research, and
takes
respect, and it's been so moving for me to read about the Edwards sisters who sang at Prohibition rallies, and they had rotten eggs thrown at them, and then someone cut the tent ropes, and the tent fell in on them, and they would go down into the coal mines and sing to the miners. And I think about women in the 1920s or whatever and how courageous they had to be, and I got chills thinking about their perfect harmony in the coal mine, what it must have sounded like resonating off of those walls. And I think about my relatives that came over on the boat, and they got here and they were on the Ohio River about to come into Oak Hill, and a little 8-year-old girl reached for a bucket of water and fell into the water and drowned. And they carried her body and buried her as soon as they landed in the new land. And all of these stories, it's like I come from people. We all come from somewhere. There's a perspective. And when you think about World War I and what people endured, and I just thought, God, I'm pretty shallow. I'm thinking about, my books. Or it really made me think about how little of a perspective I have when I'm just thinking about myself and my day, and I do like furniture, all those things. When you look at the world and the suffering of the world, which Jesus did.
How about it caught my attention, the Ecclesiastes. You know, it's the same thing, and he is the Solomon, right? He's the wisest guy and all that. And he says, everything goes around.
Everything is vain.
Well, it's a vanity of vanities. But then the whole thing in chapter 1 is saying, there's the sun, and then it's the moon, and then it's the sun, and then it's the day, and then it's the night, and then you're...
everything there is, everything.
Exactly. But the way it describes everything... and he was the wisest man of his time, right? And for him to come to that conclusion that, listen, get a grip. I mean, don't get tied into things because comes and goes. And you're down right now, you could be up, or vice versa. Now you're up, don't think you're the king because...
You could go down.
Yeah, you could go down. And just learn how to live the circles in such a way that you have hope if you're down for a better time, and if you're up to look down into who else might need your help, and just bring them up.
As you were talking, I was thinking about, and I'm surprised you didn't say this, Vicki, about every time that I go to the Grand Canyon, it's perspective. And every time I go to the Grand Canyon, what I walk away with feeling is that I'm a gnat. Pretty much, there's no nice way to say it. I'm a gnat. When you look at just the grandeur of the Grand Canyon, and there's certainly many miraculous things in nature. And in my experience, the greatest thing I've seen is the Grand Canyon. I know Iwasu Falls is another one of those perspective-building things, but you look at the grandeur of God's creation, and it gives you a sense of perspective. And today it was a sad, you know, in the rat race and the craziness, and we go day to day, oh my gosh, my boss is hassling me about this, oh my gosh, this kid was this, or whatever it is. And different things give you different perspective, and it's often tragedy that gives you that perspective. Sadly enough, a 2-year-old or a 1-year-old child of a former employee in our school has leukemia. And all of a sudden you sit back and you realize what matters. You know, those things that give us perspective in terms of what matters. And I think that here comes a multi-layered question. The elements, get ready. Different elements, I think, are more predisposed to seeing that big picture than others. And I think fires are big picture people, you know, but Earths are more linear. Naturally, they're more linear in how they approach things, you know, one task at a time in terms of compliance. So how does an element that's not as easily predisposed to having that big picture perspective, what things can their leader do to help them to develop a big picture perspective? And what about leaders that are maybe, and I don't want to pick on the Earth, but I guess that's, for me, I think Earth being really linear, what if there's an Earth leader? What can that Earth leader do to step back and see a bigger picture and have a little more perspective and step out of that linear view?
Well, I think that, again, going back to the whole purpose of the elemental teaching that we talk about, is that actually I don't think that Earth doesn't have a big perspective. Earth is most likely, in some instances, to have the true perspective. And fire sometimes, just for the sake of discussion, sees what's in front of it and wants to burn it.
Okay.
Sees what's in front of it and wants to burn it. And the Earth is thinking, where's our fuel going to be in the winter? Where's our fuel going to be in the spring? So they are the guardian of the resources. So by talking in elemental language, you can help people say, is the fire just burning what's in front of it and just looking for fuel and getting off course? And is the Earth forgetting being task-oriented and forgetting that we do need to prepare for summer? You know, yes, there will be harvest. Yes, there will be things. The winds, of course, I like to say, they're the ones that see really the biggest picture. They're the only element that sees all of the elements at the same time.
You just see that extra.
Well, I'm a wind fire, yes. But, Shelley, I think you have something to say.
But how is perspective developed in teams, or how does a leader develop perspective? I think that's what you're asking.
Mm-hmm.
Is,
yes.
You know, every element's going to come to the table with a different perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you...
Well, I think it's a combination of the micro and the macro.
Mm.
That the 10-year picture, 10 years from now, what will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Nations, you know, if this happens, how is the nation going to react? Politics, and also then the micro, what's the littlest thing we can do today to make a difference? So when I'm thinking of Jesus, he was talking about eternity, but he was also saying, noticing the baby bird that had fallen to the ground and noticing the thirsty person right in front of him.
It's a balance.
It's a balance, the micro and the macro.
We don't have much time. We've got like 5 or 6 minutes here, and I wanted to jump. You have some powerful questions in the perspective section. In that he had a larger perspective. Wow. Some very, very powerful questions that you can't just sweep over quickly when you read these. And today I was following the Catalyst Conference, a lot of the tweets that are coming out of that conference in Atlanta, and Beth Moore was speaking. And she, everybody was tweeting that, you know, the problem with Twitter, she loves Twitter,
mm-hmm.
but the problem is that you retweet the message before you've even really had time to think about it yourself.
Right.
And I thought that was interesting perspective, right? We're talking about perspective here. And so in your book, you talk about a wise person does not fear the edges and the fringes, but studies them. Indeed, he or she is often in them working to make change happen. And what I love about these questions, Lori, is, you know, how you demonstrate the leadership style of an Omega leader is that forward thinking. It is that futurist, right, that they're out there thinking about the 10-year plan and then gathering the people around. But it was just a powerful chapter for me. I don't know why, but it just really, really resonated. And appreciate you writing about it, because I think that's one thing in teams and in leadership is that we do not seek the perspective of everybody at the table. We come with the agenda as the leader to drive to the goal. But if we took time using the elements, using the element decision matrix, and really gained the perspective from everybody at the table, wow, what would that look like?
Yeah, it's funny you're talking about that. Today I was sitting, I'm doing some very earthy things these last couple of weeks and part of my earth, but it's an interesting thing the way the system is developed. In having to adhere to the earth, it's inviting that dialogue, and I'm sitting with some parents and sharing a plan that I have to share with them, and it's creating that dialogue, and it completely helped me to see a situation and helped me to see data in a completely different light. And for me, it was simply by just having the dialogue. And it was the compliance, it was the earthiness of the system that coerced the fire to have the dialogue, because the fire just wanted to burn and go forward and didn't want to be bothered to stop and have the dialogue. But how much more meaningful and how much more successful is that journey going to be for me now that I've gotten the perspective of different stakeholders because I sat down and I asked the question and I put the information on the table.
Ask what question?
Well, in our case, it was a question about achievement. We were looking at our achievement statistics for our school, and I was sitting with a committee of parents that had to sign off on the improvement plan, and so, and their perspective wasn't what I had anticipated, and to be honest, I was going through, as I was jumping through a hoop because I had to check the box, right?
Mm-hmm.
But really what they presented was so refreshing and reinforcing and engaging, it was very powerful in terms of opening up the dialogue and really moving forward in the change process.
That is great. A friend of mine went to visit my mother several months ago, Catherine. You've heard me speak of Catherine, and she was sitting with Mom, and Mom said, you know, life is curves with edges. And I thought that was very profound, and Catherine paused. And then Mom said, the secret is not to sit on them too long.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really good. I have a quote in the Jesus in Blue Jeans book that we've been studying, and it was from Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, and he said, the universe is an immeasurable wheel turning forevermore, revealing with each new pass things never seen before. And I like that. It goes to the spiral thing, that every time it passes, something new is revealed. So this notion of perspective, imagine if we had that in conflict, if we stepped back. I'm remembering with my godchild one time, he leapt into the pool when I had turned my back and specifically told him not to, and then he floated to the top, and I was just having a heart attack jumping in and was so mad at him. When he finally, he came up and he was practicing floating. So he jumped in the pool and then practiced floating, which looked like he'd broken his neck. And, oh, I was so upset. And he looked up at me and he said, what do you think an eagle would be seeing right now if he was flying over us? He'd be seeing me yelling at you right now in the pool. And it just changed my perspective that, you know, an eagle would look at this differently. And he was so, you know how children are very brilliant at changing perspectives about things. So,
yes, they are.
So I'd like to challenge our listeners and invite our listeners. Think about life as a circle. What are you planting right now that's going to grow? What words did you put out there today that are going to come back to you? What is God doing in your life that's a circle? And think about these things from a larger perspective and be blessed. I'm going to go to sleep tonight thinking of my aunts singing in coal mines to encourage the miners, even though they'd had rotten tomatoes thrown at them the week before. Larger perspective, thinking in circles. Bless you all. Bye-bye.